Okay? In that instance, David felt like he was established enough that he could do something he promised to do a long time ago, and that was to show kindness to Mephibosheth. Okay? And now the very next thing that we have is David again trying to show kindness. Now, with the Bible insights that we have into David's character, we have no reason to doubt but that this was a sincere act on the part of David. Okay? David said, I will show kindness to Hanan the son of Nahash as his father showed kindness unto me. Almost an exact quote in 1 Chronicles chapter 19 is stated the same way in both places. All right, now who is this guy, Nahash? All right, there's only one other Nahash, the Ammonite, that's mentioned. And if it wasn't him, then we have no idea who it was. Okay? There's one other mention, and that is in 1 Samuel chapter 11. Okay? 1 Samuel chapter 11, verse number 1 says, then Nahash the Ammonite came up and encamped against Jabesh-Gilead, and all the men of Jabesh said unto Nahash, make a covenant with us, and we will serve thee. Okay? And they said, well, give us 7 days to see if anybody will help us. And he said, we'll make a covenant. Remember, he said, all right, but here's how I'm going to make a covenant. You've got to let me put out your right eyes. And they said, all right, give us 7 days to see if anybody will help us. And he was so cocky, he gave them 7 days. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But that was the first battle where Saul led the people of Israel. Saul brought the people up. He delivered the men of Jabesh-Gilead from Nahash the Ammonite. Okay, that's the only mention we have of Nahash the Ammonite. I think it's the same guy. Okay, some people argue on the basis of time that that was at the very beginning of Saul's reign. Saul reigned 40 years, and David has spent some time establishing himself, so it was probably 50 years between that time and now. I don't see that as a difficulty. If this was early on, a braggadocious act early on, you know, Nahash could have been 20, in his early 20s when he was king. That wasn't all that uncommon. And not only that, I mean, he could have lived a long time. He could have even got to the point where he put his son in place as king, and yet he still lived a few more years. Okay? I think it's the same guy. And part of the reason I think it's the same guy is this. Why? But if he was... Nahash then, after that point, he was the enemy of Israel, and he would become bitter enemies with Saul. Okay? Well, later on, when David starts running from Saul, okay, you've got a scenario where, you remember the phrase I told you a couple weeks ago, the enemy of my enemy is my friend? Okay? David and Nahash would have had a common enemy in Saul. Okay? And I think that's what happened. If not, then we have no idea what happened. But I think David said that Nahash showed him kindness, I think it was during the time when he was running from Saul. Okay? Where is the territory of the Ammonites? You know that right off the top of your head, don't you? Of course you don't. Okay? But we're going to refresh a little bit this morning. Okay? If you think in your mind you've got the picture, you've got the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and the Dead Sea. Okay? On the eastern side of that, which today would be the modern country of Jordan, maybe the tip of Iran, that area. That, but on the western side over there, that was the area of the Ammonites. Okay, the Moabites were on. Excuse me, I said western. It's on the eastern side. On the eastern side of the Dead Sea, that was the Ammonites. Excuse me, the Moabites down by there, Ammonites up above them. Okay, Moab and Ammon. What was the connection between those two men? Means yes, this means no. This means I'm a blonde. Okay. Wake up. Moab and Ammon. Anybody want to hazard a guess? Lot. Okay, they were the two sons that Lot fathered by his two daughters when they got him drunk. Okay? Horrible story. But Moab and Ammon, therefore, are cousins to the Israelites. When they came out of Egypt, God said, you don't mess with Moab, you don't mess with Ammon. I've given them their land, and that's theirs. This other land I'm going to give to you. Okay? So they were cousins, and they weren't exactly friendly cousins. Okay? There was conflict. In Judges chapter 10, verse 9, and Judges 11, verse 7, in both places it tells us that the Ammonites crossed the Jordan and attacked Israel. In Judges 10, it specifically says that it was part of the judgment of God upon Israel. Okay? That he allowed that to happen. He used the Philistines. He used the Ammonites. He used the Moabites at different times as his paddle, if you will, as his whip to punish. But they had come across the Jordan, they had attacked Israel, and so there was not a cordial relationship generally. David may have been trying to change that. Don't know. But at very least, Nahash had shown kindness to David, and we assume it was when David was on the run from Saul. Okay? So now, with that context, David sent ambassadors. Okay? So we've got here, number one, David's consideration. He was being considered. He was being kind. David sent ambassadors. He heard of the death of Nahash, the king of the Ammonites. And he made a gesture that was common for kings that were in alliance. That is, they were allies. Okay? That, if, let's just say that something happened to the Prime Minister of Canada or the Prime Minister of Great Britain, of England, okay? We would, typically the President of the United States would send official condolences. He would send an ambassador to convey his condolences. At certain times, maybe the President might even go himself. There was, within the last few years, there have been state funerals like that where the President said, if I go, it's caused too much of a security hassle. But he sent a representative. Okay? That's what David's doing here. He sent ambassadors who may or may not have even been armed, okay, but it was just a small group of men, to convey his condolences, to comfort Hanan, basically to say, David really appreciated your father, and he wants to express his sorrow that at the passing of your father. Okay? They didn't have e-cards. Didn't even have Hallmark. He had to send somebody in person. But that was common courtesy for princes that were friends or kings that were friends. And so that's what David did. Now, put yourself in the shoes of those servants. What are they doing? They're doing what they were told, right? They're doing their job. They are being loyal, faithful servants to their master, David. Okay? David said, look, I got a job for you. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go over to Rabbah, which was the capital city there. That would have been where the king was. I want you to go over there. I want you to convey my condolences to them. And he gave them specific instructions. He would have sent men that were good speakers, who had that air about them that they could convey it in a stately way and so forth. And he gave them instructions, and off they go. So when they get there, they deliver the message. They're simply doing their job. Right? They got themselves into this situation through no fault of their own. All they were doing was doing their job. They were faithfully serving their king. All right? Verse 3, the princes of the children of Ammon said unto Hanan their lord. And they began to plant the seed of doubt in their mind. You know what this story reminds me of? Rehoboam, who listened to the young men. Okay? And it looks like the same mistake all over again. Okay? Hanan, the young guy, the new king, and these are his friends. These are his advisors. Now, like I said, there hasn't always been friendly relations between the Ammonites and the Israelites. Okay? This may have been older men. It doesn't tell us. But this sure smacks of the whole scenario with Rehoboam and getting some really bad advice. Okay? But his princes, his advisors get in his ear and say, you're not falling for this, are you? You don't really believe him that he honestly cared about your dad. It's interesting that often people will assign motives that they themselves might well have if they were in the same situation. Now, if I were in that situation, this is what I do, so that's probably what they're trying to do to me. So cynical people tend to assign cynical motives to everybody else. But they're going, you don't believe him, do you? They're not really here to help us. He sent them here to spy. They're here to give David information so he can attack us. Now, as a young king, Hanan, I don't know how much of this he's dealt with. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, that'd be awful. I'm not falling for that. You can just follow the thought process in their mind. Okay, he's not pulling that one over on me. I might be young, but I'm not stupid. Okay, and the thought processes that are going, but his advisors got to him, and they said, you don't think that he really cares, do you? So he said, yep, I agree with you, you're right, so here's what we're going to do. Verse 4, he took David's servants, he shaved half their beards, and he cut their robes in the middle. Okay? A mini skirt wasn't fashionable then, and it's not appropriate now, but that's what he gave them. Okay? He gave these men a mini skirt. He cut it off right there. Whoop. Okay? Now, that was done intentionally to humiliate them. Okay? One or the other would have been bad enough, but both of them, he may as well have walked up to David and spit in his face. I don't believe you. I don't need your condolences. You know, here's what I think of your sympathy card. That's basically what he did. Now, in that Middle Eastern culture, the beard is a sign of maturity, of age. They would wear their beards grown out just simply to show those characteristics. And so for a man to have his beard shaven off would have been an insult. In some cases, that may have been the slaves weren't allowed to have beards. But what they did was they took and shaved off half. Now, sometimes, you know, they're trying to sell you a razor. They give you a picture like that, you know, half clean shaven, half not. But, I mean, picture that, okay? Just imagine if I took Adam this morning, took a hair clippers and ran it right down the middle and shaved off one side and left the other. I mean, that would look ridiculous. Okay? Well, then they're in the middle of another country. They've got to walk home. Now, Rabbah, which was the capital city, if you get your map in your mind, you got the Dead Sea or the Salt Sea here at the southern part. If you go just a little bit north of the top of that and over to the east about 20 miles or so, that's where Rabbah was. Okay? A little bit north of the top of the Dead Sea and east. Medeba, that we're going to read about here in a little while, is closer to the Dead Sea, but again, it's at least, I don't know, 10 miles east of the Dead Sea. Okay? If you don't have that on your map in your Bible, it's in the neighborhood of Mount Nebo. If you want to, that one probably is on some of your maps in the back of your Bible. Okay? So they're 20, 25, 30 miles, you know, a walk home. Well, did they have a change of clothes with them? I don't know. Did they confiscate their change of clothes and make them walk home like that? I mean, I would if I were trying to humiliate somebody. Okay? So they got to walk 30 miles a day, maybe 2 days walk. I mean, if it's me, I'm walking through the night when nobody can see me, you know. But they get back as far as Jericho and get some clothes and send word to David. Okay? So we see David's consideration, and what we've just described here, number two, is Nahum's contempt. Okay? His actions and his words showed contempt for David, for Israel, and for his expression of sympathy. I got no time for that. Okay? Verse number 5. When they told it unto David, he sent to meet them because the men were greatly ashamed. Now again, what did these men do to bring this on themselves? Nothing. Okay? They were doing what they were told to do. They were faithfully serving their king. Now, can we make some parallels here? Sure we could. Okay? There are times when we serve the Lord and people mistreat us. Okay? Does that mean I did something wrong? No. Now, does that mean it's not embarrassing? No, it may still be embarrassing. It may still hurt. Okay? It may still have some physical or emotional consequences. Okay? I may go out of my way to help somebody and they basically spit in my face and I'm still out the food or the money or the time or, you know, whatever I've invested in them. But it doesn't matter in that sense. God's able to take care of those things. But all I'm saying is there are times when in the service of our King, we may be wrongfully treated. Jesus said, you know, to his disciples, basically, you ought to expect this. Why are you surprised that the world hates you? Right? And these men, as far as that goes, did nothing to bring this on themselves. Okay? And there are times when that may happen. So what do? You deal with it, and you keep serving the King. Okay? That doesn't make it fun at the time. But what happened? They went, they got a change of clothes. David told them, tarry at Jericho till your beards be grown, and then return. Okay? It took a little time for that beard to grow back. What they would likely have done was let it grow to an acceptable length, trim the rest of it to match so it was kind of evened out. Okay? And David said, look, I understand. I'm sorry this happened to you. This was wrong. It shouldn't have happened to you. You take all the time you need to get things straightened out. Come back when you're ready. You know, I'm not going to put anything extra on you. As far as that goes, that was good management on David's part. Okay? So we've got David's consideration and Nahum's contempt. Now, number three, I want us to notice the natural consequences. Verse number six. And when the children of Ammon saw that they stank before David. You think? They stank. The word has some very picturesque uses. In Exodus 7, verse 18, when the water was turned to blood, it says the Bible says the Nile stank. The fishes died and it stank. Exodus 8, verse 20, it says they gathered up all the frogs and they put them in heaps and they stank. When you think about that, summertime, you get roadkill, whether it's a squirrel or a possum or a dog or a deer. I mean, you get roadkill and it's laid on the side of the road. It doesn't take very long for that to stink, okay? And if you don't see it in time, you know, you're riding down the road, you got your windows up, got your air conditioner on, you don't see it in time to hit the inside air button, woof, here it comes right through the vents. And boy, it'll just light you up. Okay? It's kind of like taking a whiff of the vinegar bottle. It's potent. And it doesn't take very long. Well, that's the idea here. That's exactly what happened with those dead fish and the dead frogs. In Exodus 16 and verse number 20, I believe it is, when they kept more manna than they were supposed to, the Bible said it bred worms and it stank. Same word. Same idea. It was an offensive, foul odor. Okay, that's the literal usage. All right, now we have a figurative usage here, and that is the men are gone away. Now you can see them patting each other on the back, congratulating themselves, bragging about it, and then as a few days go by, they begin to think about it. Well, they ought to be back by now. I wonder what David thinks. I know what David thinks. Wonder what David's going to do. I know what he's going to do. How many soldiers do we have? So they get the count. That's probably not enough. David's going to be mad. He's got some good soldiers. See, the natural consequences, they didn't really think it through before they acted, and now one of the natural consequences is guilt. Along with that is fear. Okay, what's going to happen to me? You got guilt. I got fear. And so now they go and try to cover themselves to make up for this insult they done. When the children of Ammon saw that they stank before David, and they would have, this would have been violently offensive to Israel and to David. Now, David, it does not say that as soon as the men got back, David's like, Joab, get the soldiers, let's go. Okay? This was an offense and it was an insult, but David didn't immediately just respond by sending the army. Notice the progression here. When the children of Ammon saw they stank before David, the children of Ammon sent and hired the Syrians of Beth-Rehob, the Syrians of Zobah, 20,000 footmen, of the king of Maacah, 1,000 men, and of Ishtob, 12,000 men. Now remember, we talked about that with chapter 8. The inscription to Psalm 60, Aram Naharaim, the Syrians of the rivers, that's Mesopotamia. Then you got Aram Zobah, the Syrians of Zobah. That's these people right here, the Syrians of Zobah. They said, we need some help. They went and hired out. If you got 1 Chronicles 19, it tells us how much this little insult prank cost them. 1 Chronicles 19, verse 5, then went certain and told David how the men were served, and he went sent to meet them, for the men were greatly ashamed. And the king said, tarry at Jericho until your beards be grown and then return. Verse 6, when the children of Ammon saw that they had made themselves odious to David, another way of saying the same thing, Hanan and the children of Ammon sent 1,000 talents of silver to hire them chariots and horsemen out of Mesopotamia. Remember we said the Syrians of the rivers? All right, it's interesting. That word Mesopotamia right there is the same word. Naharim, the rivers. He sent to hire Syrians out of Mesopotamia and out of Syria Maok. That was the king of Maok that we read. And out of Zobah. So they hired 32,000 chariots. Now, I think here we got a little bit of overlap. Okay, one place says 32,000 total men, including chariots. Here says 32,000 chariots. I don't know if it's 32,000 chariots. I think it's 32,000 men, including chariots, is the way I understand that. the king of Maacah and his people who came and pitched before Medeba. And the children of Ammon gathered themselves together from their cities and came to battle. Okay? And when David heard of it, he sent Joab. All right, now back to 2 Samuel chapter 10. All it says in verse 7 then, and when David heard of it, he sent Joab. All right, so when David heard about the men having their beard shaved and their garments cut off, he sent and comforted them, but he didn't send the army. So this, when it says when David heard of it, has to be when David heard that the mercenaries were coming. All right, that's exactly what these men are. They're mercenaries. That is, soldiers for hire. Now, did you catch the number there, how much silver it cost them? In 1 Chronicles 19:6, 1,000 talents of silver. That's a lot of money. I mean, a talent as a measure of weight was somewhere in the ballpark of 60 to 75 pounds. Okay? There's, you know, a light talent, a great talent. I mean, it could have been as much as 120, depending, but, I mean, we'd just say 75 to 80 pounds for a talent. Okay? That's a lot of silver. Okay? Yeah. So I got 75,000 pounds? That's a lot of money. Okay? So what's the point that I'm making here? His little prank, if you want to think of it as a prank, or more importantly, his arrogance and his unwillingness to accept that maybe David just was being kind, his insult to David cost him. It cost him a whole lot of money. And before it's over, it's going to cost him a whole lot more than that. But now, to try to bail himself out of the hole that he dug for himself, it's going to cost him 1,000 talents of silver. So they go and they hire all these soldiers out of Syria. All right, modern-day Syria is to the north of Israel. Okay, the area that the Bible calls Syria would include not only that to the north, you know, bordering the Mediterranean, but over towards the Euphrates River as well, kind of that whole general area. And did you notice Syria in the news this week? Syria shot down a Turkish fighter jet. And now Turkey has called for a meeting of NATO. Interesting. See where it goes. Same people. I mean, it's same general people that we're talking about. Okay? But he went and hired at least 32,000 soldiers on top of his army. All right? So you got the Ammonites, you got 32,000 mercenaries. Now, Rabbah, as I described, is 20, 25 miles east of the Jordan and a little bit above the top of the Dead Sea. It's over here. Rabbah, as best as I can tell, was a city situated on top of a hill or on top of a rock, okay, or a little bit of a mountainous place. Medeba was 10 or 15 miles to the west of Rabbah, and it was more in the area of the plains. All right? So they put the Syrians in Medeba, number one, because that was closer to Israel. Number two, because the flatter areas were more suited to the chariots and the horses. Okay? So they got the Syrians coming. When David heard about the mercenaries, he's like, all right, Joab, go. Now, file this away, if you would, chapter 10, verse 6. And David sent Joab. Just file that away. When we get to chapter 11, that's going to be significant. Okay? David sent Joab. I'm looking at 11, verse 6. Okay? Verse 7 of chapter 10. When David heard it, he sent Joab and all the hosts of the mighty men. Now, another way to say that would be all the hosts of mighty men. Okay? It wasn't, in other words, he sent the whole army. He didn't just send the mighties. You know, we have that listing of David's mighty men. But he sent the mighty men, but he sent the rest of the army too. And at this time, David should have had a fairly significant army. He's had time to train men and so forth. So David sent Joab and said, go. Verse 8, then the children of Ammon came out and put the battle in array at the entering of the gate, and the Syrians of Zobah and Rehob and Ishtob and Maacah were by themselves in the field. When Joab saw that the front of the battle was against him before and behind, he chose out of all them choice men of Israel and put them in array against the Syrians. Right? I think right there where he describes the choice men, that's the mighties. Okay? Verse 10, and the rest of the people he delivered into the hand of Abishai, his brother, that he might put them in array against the children of Ammon. And he said, if the Syrians be too strong for me, then thou shalt help me. But if the children of Ammon be too strong for thee, then I will come and help thee. Be of good courage, and let us play the men for our people and for the cities of our God. And the Lord do that which seemeth him good. Okay? This is number four, if you want to, for point number four. So we got the natural consequences. We've got guilt and fear and cost. And then we get conflict. Okay? But here we have the nature of conflict. We see the nature of conflict in verse number 12. Joab told his brother, be of good courage and let us play the men for our people. You have, see, the nature of conflict is that it requires of us. There was danger here. And when they got there, the Syrians were in Medeba. Now, it just says that the Ammonites were outside the gate. Now, verse number 8 says that the children of Ammon came out and put the battle in array at the entering into the gate. 1 Chronicles 19 says they came out of all the cities. So, were they at the gate of Medeba? Or were they at the gate of Rabbah, the capital city? I'm not sure. Okay? But, I tend to think it would be Rabbah. Maybe it was Medeba. I would lean towards Rabbah, but whatever. It's not told here. But what we see is that when Joab, you got Medeba here, Rabbah here, Joab's coming this way, and he got there just in time to get in between the two. Okay? If the Syrians had joined up with the Ammonites and you got a lot bigger army, maybe you got a lot bigger trouble. Okay? But he got between them. And so when he realized there's Ammonites here, there's Syrians there. Now, how could he tell the difference between them? Did they have uniforms? Probably. Okay? Did they have different color paint on their chariots, on their armor? I mean, there was some way to identify them. All right, that's Syrian armor. I recognize that. I've seen that before. Those are Ammonitish weapons. I mean, it's amazing. You get around military men that have been around a while, and they can tell you if a weapon is Russian or German or Chinese. I mean, they can look at it and tell you. And you know, these men, they've been around long enough to be able to tell the difference, right? But Joab says, look, I'm taking the mighty men, and I'm taking on them. Why? Because the mercenaries likely were better soldiers. Joab put strength against strength, and he said, I'm going to go, and I'm going to try to knock them out. And this is an interesting verse here in verse 11 that could be and should be applied to Maranatha Baptist Church. If they're too strong for me, you help me. If they're too strong for you, I'll help you. Okay? If you need help, I'll help you. If I need help, you help me. They were blood brothers. We are brothers in Christ. But the same should be true of us, should it not? If you need help, I'll help you. If I need help, I ought to be able to understand that I can count on you to help me. And he said, look, we're in this together. And I'm going to start over here and you start over there, but if we need help, we'll help each other. And we're going to, you know, sink or swim, we're in it together. And then, verse 12, Joab to Abishai. This is just a little window. I mean, in athletics, sometimes you see a little clip of the pregame speech, the pep talk, or maybe the halftime talk. Now, they probably don't show you the really good stuff. Okay? But, you know, you get a guy who's trying to get everybody pumped up. Well, this wasn't like that. This was a life or death, dead serious, clenched jaw, steely eye kind of a conversation. Look, this could be the end of us, and it could be the end of Israel, but it's not going to be. Now, he says in verse 12, be of good courage and let us play the men. All right? It's said almost the same way in 1 Chronicles chapter 19, verse 13, be of good courage and let us behave ourselves valiantly for our people. All right? Both, in every case there, be of good courage and play the men or behave valiantly, it's the same word in both places. Okay? In the first instance, be of good courage. It's an imperative. It says, look, be strong. The word means to be strong, to strengthen, to grow firm or strong. And he's saying, look, you need to stiffen your back, stiffen your resolve, have some backbone. Let's be of good courage. And then let us play the men. Right? The let us. It's a plural idea. He's exhorting his brother to go along with him. Okay? Let us play the men is another way of saying let's be strong. Act like a man. Conduct yourself like a man. In in 1 Chronicles 19, it's worded a little bit differently. But the whole idea is, look, we've got to be men. And you, Abishai, and I have to be leaders. We have to just take it to them and lead our soldiers to do the same thing. Now, we're not told that David had any chariots. The Syrians had chariots. We're not told that David had any horsemen. They had horsemen. Okay? So, from a military standpoint, we're already at a disadvantage here, right? Job says, look, we're just going to go and be of good courage, and we're going to play the men. We're going to go and take it to them. Now, verse 13, there's more ways, verse 12, be of good courage, let us play the men for our people and for the cities of our God. Okay? I think the way these things came out of Joab's mouth indicated his true priority. For our people, he had a love for his people, for the cities, the land, and then he mentioned God. And verse 12, the Lord do that which seemeth him good. Okay? Now, some people, I mean, you can look at that and say, wow, Joab was a spiritual man. I think we've got enough other writing about Joab that to conclude that Joab wasn't all that spiritual of a man. Okay? To me, this is more of a fatalistic, dare I say, Calvinistic kind of a mindset. Let's do what we got to do. And now, there is a time and a place when we have to do everything we can do and leave the result in God's hands. Okay? Understand, one man said it this way, when we make conscience of doing our duty, we may with the greatest satisfaction leave the event with God. Not thinking that our valor binds him to prosper us, that would be the prosperity theology today, but that he still may do as he pleases, yet hoping for his salvation in his own way and time. That is, we're to do our best so that in good conscience I can say I served my God with every last bit of my strength, understanding that the results are still in God's hands. Okay? It's not a fatalistic, well, you know, it doesn't matter what I do, God's going to do what he wants to do. That's a wrong mindset. David said, and let the Lord do that which seemeth him good. Verse 13, Joab drew nigh, and the people that were with him unto the battle against the Syrians, and they fled before him. Now this is funny to me, verse 14. And when the children of Ammon saw the Syrians were fled, then they fled also before Abishai and entered into the city. What? They're not fighting? I'm not fighting either. You know, you think of the roadrunner, and he spins and takes off, and they get back to the city and close the gates as fast as they could, right? Okay? Now, this is battle number one. David, in this case, sent Joab to fight a battle that he didn't pick. He won the battle with God's help. This is battle number one. There's going to be a battle number two. Again, a lesson with life application, is it not? Just because we fight something one time doesn't mean that's going to be the last time in our life we ever fight it. Be it temptation, be it a human enemy, be it an obstacle of life or a physical problem. I mean, just because I fought it once doesn't mean I'm done with it and I'll never see it again. Okay? I wish that were the case. We all do. But that was battle number one. Look at, now, who started that battle? What country? That was a question. I'm looking for an answer. Ammon. Thank you. See, it wasn't a trick question. It wasn't hard. Ammon started the battle. Now who becomes the aggressor? Verse 15. When the Syrians saw that they were smitten before Israel, they gathered themselves together and had Arezer sent and brought out the Syrians that were beyond the river on the other side of Euphrates. And they came to Helam. And Shobach, the captain of the host of Hadarezer, went before them. And when it was told David, he gathered all Israel together and passed over Jordan and came to Helam. And the Syrians set themselves in array against David and fought with him. Now here's what happened. That 1,000 talents of silver bought the king of Ammon 32 or 33,000 soldiers and chariots and horsemen. Okay? But when those men got beat and a lot of them died, then the king of Syria, or in this case, it seems like the most powerful king. There were multiple kings of Syria, just like there were five kings of Gath and so forth. But in this case, Hadarezer said, it's personal now. You're going to whip up on my army like that. The problem was it wasn't my general leading it, but I'm taking over this fight now. So now the Syrians come back. He gathers all of his buddies and as well those that paid tribute to him, those that were under him. He gathers them all together and he brings down a large army of Syrians against David. When David heard it, he gathered all Israel, so this time it wasn't just David sent Joab, David went. Now, he did something smart here. Verse 17, he says, and he passed over Jordan and came to Helam. He didn't wait for them to bring the fight to him. When he heard, knew they were coming, he went and fought the battle on their territory. Now, you know, that's something in which we've been blessed in America. You know, for a long, long time, there hadn't been a battle on our shore. And that's part of the thinking is we're going to take it to the enemies there so we don't have to fight them here. I mean, there's a mindset that wants to undermine that, but it's not good policy for our country. David here demonstrated leadership. He said, they're coming. I'm going to go meet them there. We're going to fight on their land. He also said, I'm not going to sit back and wait for them. I'm going to go get them. Okay? The Syrians set themselves in array against David and fought with him. Verse 18, and the Syrians fled before Israel, and David slew the men of 700 chariots of the Syrians and 40,000 horsemen and smote Shobak, the captain of their host, who died there. All right, so the big name general, he said, the problem is I didn't have General Shobak running this thing. Shobak was there, you're not beating my army. Well, guess what? God allowed Shobak to die at the hands of David and his men. Okay? You put 2 Samuel 10, 2 Samuel 8, and 1 Chronicles 19. You put all those together. In different places, you get different numbers. 2 Samuel 8, it says 22,000 men were killed. And then later on in verse 13, it says 18,000 were killed in the Valley of Salt. All right, that gives us a total of 40,000, right? 22 plus 18. And 1 Chronicles 19, you know, it tells us, but here you got two different battles. They fought the Syrians one time, and then the Syrians came against David a second time. And so in one place you get partial numbers, in another place you get totals. People want to look at this and say, oh, there's got to be errors in the text. You know, there's got to be conflict in the Scripture. No, you're getting a partial description here and a partial description here, and here you get a bigger picture. But you put all the numbers together, it all matches. Different numbers died at different times and on different battlefields. But all together, there were at least 40,000 that died. I don't care how you slice it. That is a big defeat. That's a big defeat. Which brings us to verse number 19. When all the kings that were servants to Hadarezer saw that they were smitten before Israel, they made peace with Israel and served them. So the Syrians, I love this, last phrase, 2 Samuel 10, verse 19. So the Syrians feared to help the children of Ammon anymore. It's your fault I'm in this mess. Well, that's kind of smart, yeah. The last time we helped Ammon, we lost a lot of people. We're not doing that anymore, right? At least they learned one lesson, right? The Syrians feared to help the children of Ammon anymore. We're not hiring soldiers out to you, and if you pick a fight, you can fight your own fight. I'm not losing my men because you ran your mouth, right? That's basically what happened here. But in the big picture, David was trying to do good, hence the title, Returning Evil for Good. David was trying to do good. Hanan returned evil. Hanan then, his conscience begins to work on him and his guilt and his fear, and he hires soldiers. Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. So then David fights a battle that he didn't start. Wins that battle. And then somebody else, the king of Syria, wants to continue fighting with him. David's fighting two wars here that he didn't start, didn't necessarily want to start. But in both cases, God delivered them against an army with more firepower, if we would say it in our terms today. They had better equipment, chariots and horses, more firepower, and yet that was no obstacle for the God of heaven. And the God of heaven is demonstrating through Israel that He is superior to the gods of the heathens. All of that flows right into a story that you know in chapter 11. Okay? Chapter 11, verse 1, and it came to pass after the year was expired, at the times when kings go forth to battle, David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the children of who? Ammon. And besieged Rabbah. But David tarried still at Jerusalem. Now, a lot of times we focus on the David tarried at Jerusalem, and this is the story of Bathsheba. And we'll get there. Okay? But you got to understand how it fits in the historical context. Okay? It seems that at this time, the weather and the timing and all that wasn't conducive for a siege. So they fought the battles, they went home, then it says, at the times when kings go forth to battle, usually in the spring of the year. Okay? Tie that together, we've got to wrap it up for today. But all of that ties right in with 2 Samuel chapter 11 and the story with which you're much more familiar, that of David and Bathsheba. Okay? The backdrop for all of that happened. David's consideration, Nahum's contempt, the natural consequences. And then we get a little insight into the nature of conflict. It required courage. So it brought upon him. It repeated. But in all of that, God delivered.